Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We're just catching up here in the studio, having a good time with our group. I missed something over here in this quadrant of the room, but that's okay.
It's a little Yiddish.
There was some Yiddish going on.
You missed a little Yiddish.
This part of the roundtable I missed, this quarter, but that's okay. Let me introduce everybody, and we'll have a great I'll introduce everybody. I'll remind you that you can be a part of the program, and then we'll get into all that we have here and hopefully have a great conversation about the issues of the day. Panel at WAMC.org is how you can be a part of the program. Panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. I salute you, sir. Good morning.
And I salute you. I am delighted to be here. I hadn't expected to, but one of my physical appointments ended up not happening. And I said, good, I can go be on the air live.
Not a physical, but a physical appointment.
Actually, interesting. Interestingly, the name of the group is Physical, F-Y-Z, oh. Physical.
Physical.
And it's for doctors? This
is it's for my back.
Oh, physical therapy.
Yeah.
Well, I went and had a bunch of tests yesterday, and I'm happy to report everything's fine.
Well, we are delighted, because we could not do without you here.
Thank you.
That is good. Everything is fine.
Concerned about hardening of those arteries in the neck, and that's clear. And all is good.
Yeah. Well, that's good. The voice you hear is Libby Post, political consultant who joins us. I was here Monday, and we're lucky enough to have her back today. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
It's nice to have you.
Thank you, darling.
It's always nice to have you in your rightful place there at the end of the round table.
Yes, I'm at the end of the round table. That's sort of an oxymoron, but that's okay.
Rich Honan is back with us, a corporate attorney and our dear friend, and great to have Rich with us. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Great to be here live and to see everybody.
Wonderful to have you. We're having some trouble making a connection with Dan Irizarry, who is the chairman of the Capital District Latinos. And so when we get that connection, Dan will join us.
We'll announce it.
And then you can wear your headphones. That's right. But we'll get to Dan in a few minutes as soon as we dial him up. In the meantime, we have a great group here, and we'll get started. Again, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so let's start off with what is happening, which I think is interesting. So I wonder where
the
stories are. There
this
we go.
The port crisis.
Yes, the supply chain action plan, Rich. That's what they're calling it in the Biden administration, the action plan. The new White House supply chain action plan aims to ease a tremendous backlog. So the White House announced the plan Tuesday aimed at expanding the capacity of U.S. ports and inland waterways as persistent supply chain congestion slows goods deliveries and fuels rising prices. Most of the new activity involves $17 billion in ports funding included in the bipartisan infrastructure legislation that Congress approved last week. But the administration plans within the next 45 days. That's after Christmas, right? Okay. No.
No.
You're asking the wrong group.
Right. There are three Jews sitting around here, honey. I bet you we can't even tell them when Hanukkah begins.
And we all went into a bar,
right? And we hit our heads on the thing because we're all so short.
All right, that was great, but okay, just about anyway. I think
when is
so. I think Hanukkah is before 45 days will have been completed.
Yes, I'm looking, actually.
Yes, it's early in December, I believe.
Yes, it is. It's early, though.
This is great radio.
Isn't it?
I know. Isn't it great?
One
it's
of my
the
favorite
mixing and melding of cultures. Okay. That's good, yeah.
One of my favorite things to do, which is certainly not the case this morning in the studio, is to ask my students, or was when I was teaching, what percentage of Americans are Jewish?
Yeah.
You would be very surprised.
Yeah. Oh, we take over the world, so there's got to be at least 90.
I remember one time in a fairly big class, it was 50%. The actual number is 3, of course.
Yeah, 3.
Right.
A little lower.
And just for edification's sake, and then we'll get to the supply chain, the first night of Hanukkah is actually November 28th, the Sunday of Thanksgiving Day weekend. Hmm. It's early this year. very early.
Yeah.
Okay, so that, so the first lot, yeah. So it's 47 days to Christmas, and it's like 20 days to Hanukkah.
Yeah, it's almost.
Okay, so that was my ultimate point. Now, here we go.
Okay, great.
Jesus.
As the minority voice in the room,
most
we have to
of the
yes,
right now, how's it feel, Joe?
Get Dan here. Most of the new activity involves $17 billion in ports funding included in the bipartisan infrastructure legislation that Congress approved last week. But the administration plans within the next 45 days to award $243 million in new port and marine infrastructure grants, according to senior administration officials. Port officials around the country also will be able to redirect leftover money from previous federal grants to new projects aimed at clearing bottlenecks under a Department of Transportation initiative. At the Port of Savannah in Georgia, officials plan to use $8 million to set up five inland lots to absorb thousands of shipping containers clogging the docks.
I love Savannah.
It's a great town. It is a great town.
They took the bench away and they put it in the and they put it in the museum.
Did they?
The Forrest Gump bench.
Do we
Forrest
all know
Gump.
The
yeah.
bench? Yeah.
But I, you know, I think we've all seen the pictures of the clogged ports, and it really is something. I'm not exactly sure what caused all of it, but there we are. So. Rich, do you want to start us off and what you think of this?
Sure. First of all, what we're trying to do now, it sounds like basically we have too much stuff, and so now we're just finding other places to put the too much stuff, but it's still not getting it actually through the ports.
I don't get that. What do you mean too much stuff?
So what most of this money and these new lots are going to do is they're going to take the cargo containers
that are
coming off the ships but still can't be trucked out, which is the choke point. They're going to be moved to another lot while they still continue to be trucked out.
And why can't they be trucked out?
That goes to the heart of the crisis. Which I would love to blame on this administration, but in fairness, you really can't because it goes back further. I think a couple of things. First, people
you just won points.
Yeah,
I can hear the crowds roaring.
If
outside.
You talk to the truckers, if you talk to the real the supply the truckers in California, a couple of things. First. You know, in the old days, before 2008, 2009, they used to deliver those big cargo containers used to be delivered right on like the backs of trucks.
Right.
They call them chassis. They don't do that anymore. So they just deliver the containers after like 2009. As a cost cutting technique, they stopped doing that. So now you have to get not only the trucks but the chassis. You know, the back of the semi, and there's a dearth of those for one thing. The other thing that they'll tell you is the ships are now twice as big. So, you know, they're unloading huge amounts of containers.
And then there's also not enough people to do all the work.
Now, that's where I was waiting all day to take some shots at some
the
administration.
Administration. Okay.
And it's not this administration. I think that the people, I think, would probably point some fingers at what do they call it? AB5? The California Assembly Bill. That was meant to make Uber drivers employees of Uber. It somewhat inadvertently included truckers, so that truckers, a lot of whom are independent contractors, would have been classified as employees by the trucking companies, and the trucking companies were then loath to work with them because they'd be considered employees. That was a big deal in California, and I think everybody thought that there was going to be an explicit carve-out for truckers. There was not. The truckers went to court and have a preliminary injunction, and it's gone all the way up to the Supreme Court. Has not been heard yet, but the preliminary injunction stays in place. But what that led to the reduction of truckers in California, and California is a bad place to not have truckers since 40% of our stuff comes into ports in those two ports in California. So there's the background.
Really interesting.
So that's like not reading the fine print of the bill, right?
When did the bill pass?
The bill went into effect. It passed in 2019. It went into effect 1/1/20. So it's been in effect. A lot of people looked for injunctions. The truckers got theirs, but it had already. A lot of truckers said, "I'm just not. Why would I have to work for you?"
I'm surprised that the legislature didn't do a fix.
Yes, I am too, although they might... I am too. And now you would think that, you know, when Buttigieg went out there, you know, being in
Secretary of Transportation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, being a Democratic administration, you would have thought at least they could have prevailed upon the California legislature to at least make that explicit. Wouldn't help you today, but it would make the trucking companies more comfortable in hiring these independents. So that's part of it. But a lot of this started years ago. I want to blame it on Biden, but I can't.
But Rich, isn't there also a problem that there aren't enough truckers now? Like,
yes.
There aren't enough anythings now.
Right.
True, but that problem was exacerbated in states like California that made it tougher from a regulatory standpoint to be a trucker. So there's fewer truckers everywhere, but there's more so there. And that hits us hard because that's where the ports are.
Now, in the old days, the Teamsters were pretty close to the Republicans, Rich. So the question I'm asking is there a possibility here that Trump, of course, who we know is throwing hand grenades into anything he can, may have some influence here?
I don't see it. I don't know. I don't know. I those of us who are supportive of Trump think that this would have been the kind of thing where he would have gone down there with a megaphone and just and made people and probably brought in the National Guard and brought in those trucks and things maybe earlier. But I don't know that he's had anything to do with this particular crisis.
Well, his general approach is screw up everything you can during the Biden administration.
I know, so. But then you're asking, you know, him to come out in favor of workers.
So, I don't know, you know, the Teamsters have always had this very
close.
Yeah,
I get that. But in general, just in a more broad thing, he would have to come out in favor of workers, of people making a living, that kind of thing.
Well,
and that's a little anathema to him.
There are those of us who think that's exactly what he was in favor of. But
yeah,
that's an argument for
another,
a different day.
Right, it certainly is.
We disagree.
And we'll agree to disagree, and that's okay.
Okay. So back to the
17 opinions.
Back to
the what do you do?
Well, the what do you do, and the fact of what President Biden moved yesterday. Will that help? And what will it do short term? What will it do long term? Because I mean, even 45 days, when you're thinking about. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but. You take a snapshot of the problem, right? And you say, this is what we're going to do over 45 days. But more ships are going to come in, and you still have to then keep dealing with that problem. And while I'm sure that has been taken into account, it seems difficult to catch up over that period.
Well, I think everybody agrees, the economic types, I think, agree that this is well into 2022.
Yeah.
And perhaps beyond.
So if you're Biden, obviously, and if you're in the White House and you open up the New York Times in the morning and other things, and you see you got a problem, you got to answer it somehow.
Right.
And so you call a meeting and you say, we're having an emergency thing here because people aren't going to be able to buy Christmas presents or buy turkeys or do whatever they're doing. So you give an answer. Even if you were president, Rich, you would do that, right?
I'd like to think that I would have fired my transportation secretary who took, you know, for taking any type of personal time during a crisis. And
oh, boy.
Wait a minute.
Oh, boy.
Excuse me.
Okay.
You want to know why he had to take personal time?
Why?
Because they had just adopted two little kids, and Gus, the boy, was in the hospital. And, no, you know, he was in the hospital, and it was serious. And so we can't say, oh, because he took personal time, he should be fired. This man was caring for his children, which is something we all laud.
Absolutely.
We all want people
Absolutely.
To do, you know. And the fact of the matter is that there are, it's not like Buttigieg checked out, you know. He was taking care of his kids. He has people in his department that can help with this. But the other part of this is that people have such a skewed view of government that they expect Biden and everyone else around him to just wave a magic wand and all of this is going to get taken care of. Well, that's not the way this works. And it's going to take time. And this was created by your president, by his response to COVID. All of this is just a domino effect of how the Trump administration dealt with COVID to begin with.
All right. My God, there's so much there I want to talk about. So let's take a break. We'll all, and then no one can say a word during the break because you have to hold it until we come back.
Just another man doing what he can. But what does she care when a woman loves a man? She'll just string the line.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Listening to Jane Monheit, whose new album is Come What May. Jane is playing The Egg on the 11th, which is tomorrow for those of you keeping score. TheEgg.org for more information, beautiful music that we'll be playing throughout of throughout the morning. So,
Who said that? Beautiful music.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Lawrence Welk.
Oh, Lawrence Welk. Yes.
Where
Turn off the bubble machine. Yes.
I said I would fire Buttigieg, and Libby said it was Trump's fault.
Excuse me.
So
okay. Well,
that was just a summary.
And then during
just to review the bidding.
And then during the break, I learned a tremendous amount from the three of you.
Yes.
But Dan Irizarry is with us now.
Dan,
I am sorry we had phone difficulties, and so. It was not your fault, and not really our fault either. We didn't have a phone line. But anyway, it's great to have you with us. Chairperson of Capital District Latinos, Dan Irizarry, joins us. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well. In the words of Rita Moreno playing Anita in West Side Story, I like to live in America, everything good in America.
Yes. I like that.
And what comes after that?
Yeah, I was wondering if you're going to finish the song.
How much trouble can we get you into? And on the question of Puerto Rican statehood, you are ...
Well, I like to read the fine print first, but this has been going for a long time. I lean towards independence, just because all of the history that has befallen is not great. Not a great example. We're the last remaining colony of the United States, in my opinion. But we'll see what happens. I think this is just the perennial football that gets kicked around and never gets resolved.
So let me be the 400th person to congratulate you and the Capital District Latinos on getting a lot of money yesterday, $250,000 from Business for Good, which is a Saratoga Springs-based nonprofit, in the paper this morning. The donation comes just 3 months after it was highlighted your need for repairs of the former church at Central Avenue that you purchase, that you use as the headquarters. And this will help you renovate and rehabilitate. And while we have a lot of crummy, stories about things that are going wrong, this is a story about something that is very much going right in our community. So we congratulate you and thank you for your incredible efforts.
Well, I got to say, we were up against it. The pandemic had really thrown a wrench into our desire to campaign for funds. And you guys know better than ever that, better than most, that that's a hard task, right? So we kind of threw ourselves into the challenge. And I'm happy to say that not only did Business for Good donate that amount of money to our campaign to fix the building and to also, stand up our operations. But through the efforts of Assemblyman John McDonald and Assembly Member Pat Fahey, we were also able to get a commitment from the legislature for $1 million in funding to rehabilitate the building. So we are in a much better place than we were just, a year and a half ago.
Well, again, we congratulate you and thank you for your hard work and for the great work that you're doing in the community. I am sorry to say to you that you walked into a bit of a hornet's nest because while we were dealing with your phone issues, we've been talking about port issues and supply chain moves and plans to improve that and so forth. So, and then we got into it a little bit about Pete Buttigieg, who is, of course, the transportation secretary. So we get this letter from John, who says, Libby is right. The Republicans spent 4 years burning down every last part of the government, and Rich not only takes the party tactic of blaming the Democrats for not fixing it, but takes it one step further by playing blame the gay card, the favorite sport of conservatives. There is no way that Rich would be criticizing a heterosexual father for doing the same thing that Pete Buttigieg did. Rich is being anti-gay, period. I will, of course, allow you to counter that.
I would criticize anybody in that position, because when you go to work at the White House, you don't get to have work-life balance. You don't get to have a family life. When you have the honor, the privilege, the responsibility of working in the White House, you have to put everything else aside. Everything else is of secondary importance. I'll tell you the other dirty little secret that nobody wants to talk about. It's like that in a lot of professions, a lot of positions. Nobody really wants a surgeon who has work-life balance. I can tell you, nobody wants an attorney who has work-life balance. Okay? You want somebody who is absolutely, totally focused upon your needs at that time. And I would say that about anybody at the White House level. If you're going to be in that job, that is your life.
So, I agree with what you just said in principle, because there are those positions. I will also even give you the point let's accept that point. The argument, however, and you did not do this, nor do I think in any way, shape, or form you are anti-gay. However, the right, the Tucker Carlsons and the Sean Hannitys of the world, are asking the question of, well, you have one guy at home, why do you need two? And that certainly comes off as anti-gay.
I have something to say. Oh, brother.
Right?
Here come the letters.
Well, I'm just saying.
It is.
I mean,
it's homophobic. It's not
right.
Anti-gay. Let's make it clear.
Okay.
It's homophobic. Okay? It's homophobic. It's, and
do,
they
what,
are.
What is the, No, you're fine. I apologize for being dense, but what's the difference?
Well, I mean, homophobic is the word that we use because it's more direct.
Okay.
Okay.
I was using the language the letter writer
right.
was using.
Anti-gay,
but okay.
It's fine. Okay. But I call it homophobia because it's a fear. It's the fear of LGBTQ people, and that fear turns into hatred.
Well,
and
but
this is what we're saying.
Let me
But. The fact of the matter is that I understand what you're saying, and you give up your life. Look, I have during campaign season, I have no work life balance. Ask Lynn. She's like, you know, she's been a saint through all of this. I think you do want a surgeon who has work life and life balance, because you want a surgeon who's going to be awake when they're performing surgery on you. You do want a lawyer with work-life balance because you want them to be cognizant of the cases when they go into court. You want people to have that balance. And I don't think anybody in this White House said to Pete Buttigieg, no, you can't do this because you have to be here 100% of the time. I don't think that this administration sees their employees, their appointees, with that kind of perspective. But the bottom line is this. If Pete Buttigieg was straight and married to a woman and they had just adopted twins and one of them was in the hospital, Sean Hannity and the rest of them on Fox wouldn't be saying a word about this. Not one word, because, oh, look, the supportive husband with his wife doing the right thing of taking care of their kids. Because this is two men in a committed relationship, married, adopted children, which I can tell you Fox viewers think lesbians and gay people adopting children is like the worst thing in the world. They see this as something to attack.
Yeah, I don't see any of that. But
You're a straight white man.
But I would say I would hold. I'm going to hold everybody who works in the White House.
Hey, Dad, know you wish the phones would go out again.
and I'm sorry. I'll let Dan weigh in. But I'm going to hold everyone who works at the White House to the same standard. I'm not going to ask less of somebody because of their family situation or because of their orientation or because of their race or anything like that. You are there to do that job and that job only. And if something, God forbid, comes up in your life where you can't do it, then you either step aside or step down or you do something more than what was done now. If not, and this is all in response to Alan's initial question, which really had to do a lot with optics, right? You're sitting there, you're reading the New York Times, we have a supply chain crisis, what do we do?
Yeah.
And you cannot tell me, I'll turn it around to you, Libby, you cannot tell me if this happened in the Trump administration and the Secretary of Transportation during the biggest supply chain crisis probably in American history was AWOL for 2 months, even for a great reason. You can't tell me you would not criticize that. And you should criticize that. It's not their fault.
Wait a minute. Wasn't Trump on the links during a lot of COVID? Like, wasn't he still like on the links during the weekends?
Yes.
Absolutely. And I'd argue, Dan, that he. And by the way, Dan, good to be with you again. Sorry that we're not seeing you here. I'd argue that he was getting work done, and I'm not one of those people who jumps on Biden because he's working from wherever, Rehoboth, you know, wherever.
But we don't know if Pete Buttigieg wasn't working.
Well, that was the word that he was working from home.
When things are going, you may be right, and it may be that substantively he was doing everything that could have been done, but the fact that nothing was getting fixed.
But you're talking about optics too.
Yeah,
you're talking about optics.
That's a big part of it.
When people are dying by the thousands, and you're on the links. Come on.
Yeah,
you
right.
can't
you
get
know,
worse optics than that.
You know, I have to say that we have not talked about this story. The story has been brewing for months, and we have not talked about this aspect of the story. And this is what happens when you do that, because it just sort of comes out from nowhere. This is great,
right.
Alan.
Well, no, I think your last comment is very important. Rich started this in a good way, I thought. You know, we were discussing whether or not what obligations people have and how long they should work and all the rest of it. And then somehow it all became a question of gayness. And frankly...
Not from me.
Well, no, I mean...
Yes. Yes, from you.
No, wait a second. There seems to be a little differential here. Rich is saying, no, he should have been there. You're saying you're picking on a gay guy. Right.
No, I'm saying you're picking on a parent and people are using the fact that these are two gay parents to make it even worse.
Well, and that's the point I was trying to make with Rich
if,
is
if
that your
are doing
argument
that, that's wrong. Joe, I'm with you. If people are doing that, that's wrong.
But your argument is different than the Hannity Tucker Carlson argument, which is much more snarky and much more, to use Libby's phrase, homophobic.
I don't associate myself with that argument.
I know that. And that's the only point that I wanted to make. Okay.
Hey, Joe?
Yes.
You know, I think as a person who's a member of a minority group and who at times has, you know, had the opportunity to be in certain types of positions, you know, not high profile, but higher profile than I'm used to. Very often, you know, we receive criticism, like Pete Buttigieg has received criticism about his parental duties and taking time. And you know what we have to do as members of a minority group that is being scrutinized through perhaps a different lens than other people? We rise to the occasion and prove that despite what everybody says about us, we're up to the task. And I think the way, and I've watched Pete Buttigieg and I admire him incredibly. And I think the way he's going to combat all this, because he dusts this off when I've seen him in interviews, he's going to do the best job he can. And I have faith that he has enough smarts that he'll be able at least to move this, the answer to this problem forward. And that's what we sometimes have to do. Oh, you got in there because you're this, or you got in there because you're that. Yeah. Either you get bogged down in that whole dialogue, or you say, you know what? I don't give a rat's, you know what? I'm going to do my job, and that's going to be the proof.
Yeah. So let's take a break. We have a lot of letters that I want to get to. Some of the letters aren't snarky. So we'll get to those. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Time to Paris in time for frock, to Boston in meantime, darling, meantime, let's take a walk around the block.
We'll get to it, I promise. All right, we have a lot. A lot to talk about this morning, and we will get to it. I promise you this. All right. Patrick writes, I think the real point is that parental leave has been devalued in our society, something that it is for women primarily. The macho attitude of being back at your desk the day after birth needs to change at all levels. I'm proud of Pete's willingness to take the flak by being the model for the future. I mean, there are companies, and Libby, you may know this better than anyone in the room, but there are companies that offer leave for mm-hmm. for pet.
We all do. Pet bereavement. Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Your law firm does?
Sure.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure we do. No, what we do is we allow leave for, we don't actually
family
don't ask.
Leave.
We allow family leave.
Family
we,
leave.
And we don't inquire bereavement. Into the personal
yeah.
time.
So, okay. Yes.
And certainly, traditional maternity, it's not only obviously is it allowed, but we and other companies go through great lengths to make sure that the old guys like me don't give
you don't
a
know
hard,
what old is,
but the old people don't give a hard time to people taking paternity leave because they it's mm-hmm. something they're not used to, and yeah, we go through a lot of training on that, and I think a lot of companies do, so we're very respectful of that.
All I know is every time I see Murray go up the stairs very slowly, mm-hmm. I know I'm going to need, at some point, unless he needs it first, a pet bereavement yeah. time.
Well, it's hard. You,
yeah,
we
it
all
hard.
Know
but,
it's like.
But
yeah.
by that same, I know you. But by that same token, no. If I said I couldn't show up for the roundtable because one of my kids was sick, everybody'd be great. Not great, but fine. We understand.
Yes, obviously.
But if you're closing your $500 million deal, okay, and we're in tense negotiations, and I say, geez, sorry, I can't be there, but these three other people are going to do it. You're not going to be happy. You're going to say, I hired you and your team.
Well,
and,
that's
and,
the difference. We don't pay you.
but you see my point?
I mean, do.
You hired,
I know. I understand.
And it's not an excuse to say, hey, you know what? But I have great quality of life. I was at my kid's soccer game. That's great, and I respect that. I applaud that.
I just have to say that there's so much we don't know about other secretaries and mm-hmm. of what they're doing and what they have done and what the time they have taken off and
That's
so
true.
Forth. And you wonder, like, I mean, every once in a while, and I can't think of a concrete example right now, but you would hear something in any administration and
sure.
you'd say, oh, I didn't know they were married. I didn't know they were married. They're together, those two people. And then this happened and then they're off doing something. And then you think to yourself, oh, well, I had no idea that was going on. My point is that this broke through, and the idea of why it broke through, I think, feeds mm-hmm. into what you were saying, Libby. Mm-hmm.
And you don't think any part, and I, you don't think any part of that was because what happened to have happened on his watch, not his fault, but it happened to have fallen to him on his watch, was that we had a supply chain crisis. So that's the one.
I think
I don't know what the
crisis.
Secretary of Transportation does. I know that Norman Mineta got an airport named after him because when I fly into SJC, that's what it is. But
SJC being
San Jose.
San Jose.
Yeah. That much I know. But I don't know what Norm Mineta did every day.
But I know what Rich is doing. He's using the Republican playbook of underscoring the culture wars and getting us from talking about really important things.
Could you say the last sentence again? Getting us from
talking about really important
focus.
Things.
Oh, yeah.
He's making us look at culture wars. I'm
culture tongue wars.
Is firmly in cheek, Rich. I'm not attacking you. I'm just saying this is what the Republicans are great at. We spent the last 20 minutes or whatever talking about a valid point that Libby makes. But to me, we're not talking about other issues that are like kitchen table issues that people are really interested in. And that's kind of what the Republican Party has cornered the market on in terms of how it messages and how it creates controversy and gets people to focus on one issue versus all of these other weedy issues on the other side.
All right.
It's all about scaring people. And that's what they do really, really well.
I want to get to the weighty issues, and we will, but I want to, and this is a weighty issue too, I should say that, but we have a lot of letters, so let me go
sure,
through
go
these
ahead.
Real, we'll do a bit. We have 5 minutes before you have to take a break, so let me just roll through these letters quick. If you want to comment on them, please just go for it. Paul says, I take exception with Libby's comments to Rich that he doesn't see certain aspects of anti-gay behavior because he is a straight white male. Libby is making an argument against assuming a person who is and what they think, yet commits the very same personal violation when addressing Rich. Bennett says, Rich would argue that Trump was getting work done on the links. This is really making poor excuses and turning a blind eye to sloth and incompetence. By the way, I respect any listener who uses the word sloth.
Let's not...
Anybody who could use one of the seven deadly sins.
But let's not insult the sloths, because they're very, very cute.
They are cute.
They are very cute.
And it's absurdly hypocritical... as he criticizes Buttigieg for taking necessary personal time. Also, we go to Autumn. One question, what's worse, parent taking time off for their children who are in the hospital or a president of the United States taking time to play golf or watch TV while at work? Apparently, Ted Cruz believes in work-life balances. John, he went to Cancun instead of working during a serious crisis in the state of Texas. Irene, what a crock. Is Rich really suggesting Pete Buttigieg get sacked? Which you did not say, that he should get fired.
I think I did say that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Because
right.
I said, what would you do, you know, in response? I said, I'd probably fire my Secretary of Transportation.
Because he was caring for a very ill child. What happened to the Mantra family? Values. Shouldn't we be commending him for being that involved with his family? Please, the hypocrisy is sickening. Steven, so Rich supported Trump, who didn't start his workday until 11 a.m., but he worked very late into the night.
That was executive time, Joe. Come on. Give the guy a break.
The way Libby characterizes the GOP or Fox viewers is not only wrong, but very self-serving. Are gay couples beyond reproach simply because they are not straight? We live in a country where this should not matter.
Oh, it shouldn't. You're absolutely right. And color shouldn't matter. And all of this other stuff shouldn't matter. It's a very 1970s perspective to say you're sexuality blind, you're color blind, you're this blind, you're that blind. The fact of the matter is our society is built on repression and oppression and discrimination.
Mike writes... Just commenting on Rich's analysis, he conveniently leaves out the California law these truckers fall under requires employers to provide truckers overtime, sick pay, and other benefits. Not a bad thing for truckers. It always comes down to profit versus treating people like human beings.
Yeah, but those truckers are independent contractors that have these are independent people who own they're not employees. Rich. They don't mean to be employees. They charge a different amount to the trucking companies than an employee would cost.
Is that true for everybody, or is it just
that's true for any independent contractor, right?
Yeah, but what about all the people who are not independent?
Well, people who aren't independent contractors would be classified as employees, but they would have been anyway, even without the law.
Go ahead, Dan. And then I have to take a break, but go ahead.
Sure. Real quick. I missed part of the discussion this morning, but did anybody talk about the possibility of using the National Guard to attack the problem at the ports? And my vote would be, you know, let's get Russell Honore out of retirement and have him do the logistics part to see if we can't shake this thing loose.
Well, Dan, just to be fair, because I mentioned that might have been something Trump would have suggested. So if you want to withdraw the suggestion, you can.
Actually,
I happen to agree with you. Though.
I think Biden actually did suggest it.
He did, and then the White House walked it back and said, we're not going to do that because he can't do that. It's got to come from the governors. And I think he was right to do it.
All right, three letters, and then I'll be caught up. Lee says, how can anyone still have the wool pulled over his eyes like Rich. That's what it says. I'm sorry. Trump being a working class hero, question mark. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and has spent a lifetime looking down on average Americans. I want to hear proof from Rich that Trump did anything for working class people other than blow smoke up their tushies.
We don't have the time.
Okay. Then that was a great answer, Rich.
How do they spell tushy?
T-U-S-H-I-E-S.
Yeah, that's right.
This whole day is taking a very Yiddish kind of...
Yeah, well, you know, it is what
when
it
in
is.
Rome.
Right.
Paul writes, trucker shortage getting worse with young people and legalization of marijuana and drug testing requirements for truckers. Also, young people also don't like the long hours required for truckers. Then we get the supply crisis entirely the result of the relocation of all manufacturing capacity to China. Hopefully it will get bad enough to see some manufacturing return to this country. And Trevor says, wait, I have more questions for Rich. One, did Trump solve the climate crisis before he went golfing? Two, did Trump solve the healthcare crisis before he went golfing? Three, did Trump solve the homeless crisis before he went golfing? We'll hold it there. We'll take a break. We'll be back. Our wonderful panel is here. Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, Dan Irizarry, and Libby Post. We'll be right back.
There may be teardrops to share some while there's moonlight and music and love and romance. Let's face the music and dance. Let's face the music and dance.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable, letting you listen to a little of Jane Monheit, who has a new album, Come What May, and is playing at The Egg in Albany on the 11th, which is tomorrow, and you can find out more at theegg.org. Theegg.org. Okay, let's move on, and we'll go to other topics. I would like to go to... let's see. I wanted to go to the fact of inflation surging to its highest since 1990. Consumer prices were 6.2% higher in October than a year ago as inflation continues to chip away at the buying power of households across the country. This news out this morning. And Alan, what do you make of it?
Real trouble for Biden. No question, because you get blamed for anything that is going on your watch that isn't good. And this is not good because Thanksgiving is coming, Christmas is coming. People are going to have to put up with inflated prices. Now, you can write me a letter and say, you know, you're full of it, Alan, that it's really not his fault. Maybe. But you do tend to get blamed for what happens on your watch.
Rich?
Yeah, I agree with Alan. And then the question is whether this... The right-wing talking point is that the social safety net bill is going to inject more money into the system and is going to exacerbate that. You know, because there's going to be more money and that's going to drive up inflation. I think traditionally economists would say the more money there is in the system, especially government money, you're going to drive up inflation. But the question is, what can you really do about it? And does anybody take that position?
But was there inflation after the stimulus package in 2009 and 2010?
No, because
I don't think so.
Because we were in a recession. When you have an otherwise strong economy, you don't put money into the system. When you have a strong economy, inflation goes up, and supposedly you take money out of the system, and you also increase interest rates to keep that down.
But we only have a strong economy for a certain sector of the population. We don't have a strong economy for the people who need this money, who are going to be thrown out of their homes because of evictions and people who can't get jobs. I mean, you know,
want to go to the people who can't get jobs?
It's so easy. Well, the thing is, I mean, I know that there are a lot of jobs out there and people should be going out and getting jobs. I get that. And I don't understand how people can pay their mortgages or their rent or whatever it is, you know. But there are still people who can't get jobs. There are still women. I mean, women are the ones who are being hurt by all of this and by COVID the most. They lost their jobs. Many of them are the sole caretakers of their family. Child care, they want to go back to work, but child care is so expensive that it doesn't it costs more than they're going to make. And so, yeah, we have to help with some of these things. And the social safety net money will help with child care, will help with things so that people can go back to work. But I think the inflation has been caused by the supply chain issues and other factors. And we have to recognize that this isn't a Joe Biden problem, although, yes, you get blamed, it doesn't matter because you're sitting in the
seat.
My
point exactly. And you are right, Libby. Everything you've said is true, but the thing that matters is what is going to motivate somebody to walk into a polling place and vote one way or the other.
And the thing is that, as you have said many times, people, the middle class will vote either in one of two ways, wanting to help those
who need help,
bring them up, or looking for the hand above them to help them go up. And we are in a...
Or afraid of the people
who are going to help, the fact of the matter is that a lot of this is this fear comes from the fact that white people will no longer be the majority in this
country. Absolutely right.
And so, you know, that...
Oh, boy, Rich is making an awful
that,
face.
Oh, that dynamic is going to play
Rich is
out
looking into the light.
In 2022.
Is God coming, Rich?
Yeah,
what
are you looking into the light? Is there a white light coming?
Dan, what do you think of all this?
Isn't this a messaging problem as well? I mean, does anybody remember when the other guy was in the White House and the first several months, there was never, I don't think there was ever a press conference where there wasn't some mention of, well, we inherited a mess. And, you know, I know that the Democrats like to play a different type of politics and that they're, you know, seize them all high ground and all that nonsense. But there's something to be said about, look, you know, put the other side on the defensive. You know, don't constantly be on your back foot. What's wrong with saying, you know, 500,000 lives were lost during COVID, and if only the former guy hadn't been so anti-mask and anti-vax, we wouldn't be in this situation.
I say it all the time.
And oh, by the way, every single Republican administration in the past 20 years has left a huge deficit
in their wake.
And Democrats are constantly having to repair. So where is the messaging on things of that nature? And it can't be some long academic egghead, explanation. It's got to be pithy. As a matter of fact, if you can get three initials like, you know, maybe CRT, but not CRT.
That's P-I-T-H-Y?
P-I-T-H-Y.
You know, pithy.
So in other words, get something that people don't have to sit there for an hour and analyze, but kind of strikes at the heart of the message, and that is that this, yes, inflation is with us. We're tackling as best we could, but don't forget, we got left a mess, and we have to clean it up.
Rich.
And if you think a year is enough to clean it up, you got another thing coming.
First of all, Dan, I was 100% with you up until the part where you said the explanation has got to be short and pithy. Yes, Republican and Democratic administrations, everybody likes to spend money, right? I think it hasn't been since what, Clinton, that we actually had a surplus. So absolutely. And I agree with Alan that, you know, the president, that who's ever in office at the moment probably wasn't responsible for all the factors that led to inflation. But I think one of the big mistakes that maybe both sides keep making is there's some things that you can't explain in a phrase. I think you should have more faith in, I'm not saying everybody out there is an economist, but I think that people are smart enough if you make an effort to actually explain the problem in grown-up terms and say, this is where we're getting the inflation from. Libby, you're giving me looks. You don't think so? I mean, and that's, I'll tell you, that is a divide between conservatives and progressives, where I think the progressives too often are looking for the phrase or the bumper sticker. And sometimes the explanation for the problems that face us is often longer than
Trump
that.
Trump never did that, of course.
Trump did the same thing. Trump was all about the seven words. Absolutely.
It all depends on which end you burn the candle from.
Yeah. I'm not saying he was right in doing that. I'm not saying that.
No, Rick, I don't think you understood me. I was trying to make the point that we can't constantly be over-explaining things and people can't, you know, have to wade through so much to get that message, right? There's something to be said about getting a message and sticking to it and hitting people over the head with it.
Absolutely.
And you can see, you know, stop the steal.
But people know they're paying more for a turkey. People know they're paying more for...
Four words. I'm not saying that's the sum total of the strategy, but you have to find something to fight back with that people don't have to, you know, spend an hour and a half on the internet researching to see if it's, you know.
I agree with that, but that's the gig. The gig is trying to, if your job is being president, the gig is trying to explain complex things in a way that we can all understand.
Yes.
That's the job.
It's true.
I don't disagree with that. But what I'm saying is that we are kind of in a reductionist moment, right, where everything has to boil down to a few words to get people's attention, because people's attention is being fought by, you know, over by things like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Netflix. I mean, people are constantly, their senses are being bombarded. And if you don't find something that breaks through, then you're in a lot of trouble.
Right. I mean, look, I teach this. I practice this. This is about developing a clear and coherent and consistent message, one with that's laden with emotion and values. And those are the two things that will move people. And the fact of the matter is, Dan is absolutely right. We are being bombarded with millions of messages more than ever before from all these different platforms. And, you know, people, you just get it all day long. And you do have to have something that will cut through the clutter.
How do you cut through the fact that inflation is up higher? It's at a 30-year high now. What clever words do you use for that?
I can't just... Go ahead, Dan, if you can come up with something.
I know your guys' answer.
I don't have a secret formula.
Trump made me do it.
Exactly. The answer is it's Trump's fault, right?
And it is, of course.
There's some backups, but that's the go-to. Libby.
But the thing is, Rich, you said before you have to explain things to people and blah blah blah, and I agree with you. You do need to explain things to people. The problem is that Fox News, which is one of the most watched news networks, right?
Trades in
not giving people information, trades in misinformation and a skewed view of facts. And so you have all of these people watching this and thinking that this is news and is credible. And that's part of the problem here, is that we have part of this information overload, and then you have all these people who think that Fox is right. And we know that Fox isn't right.
And then I could say the same thing about CNN and the New York Times. So I think what you're talking about is what gets people elected, and I'm talking about what actually moves policy and explains things to people. I think that people are, regardless of what they're doing on Facebook or anything else, I think that most people are smart enough to understand, you know, concepts and be able to understand at least where you stand on it. They may not agree.
And at least understand how much they're spending.
Or whatever. And I think that even you guys would agree that there's some, Biden is not good at that. Obama was great at it. Reagan, you could say, was good at it. I think Clinton was probably the best, I actually think.
I don't remember you praising Obama back in the day.
But Obama was, as far as communications,
Obama was much better.
This is not Biden's strong point.
I think we're also not really understanding, and I'm not saying the people on this panel, but in the zeitgeist out there, that this is a moment that is unique in all, I don't know about human history, but certainly the history of this nation, with the exception perhaps of the flu pandemic. But this is a unique moment in history. Everything is being reevaluated. And, you know, all these constructs that we have for years, are just upended. And so that deserves some type of recognition as well. When you're talking about what we're dealing with right now, you have to point out that this is a moment that's unique in our history.
Well, I think they've done that effectively, Dan. I think everybody has said, we're talking about inflation, we're talking about the supply chain crisis. I think that this administration has done a good job at saying, first, this is not the usual state. There were things caused by whether you say it was caused by the pandemic or the response to the pandemic. There are things that we're hoping are going to be once in a lifetime events. But I think what Alan's saying, is that people need a little more than that. They need to know, okay, how long is it going to last? What are you doing about it? And, when am I going to stop paying twice as much for gas as I am now?
Yeah, I know. And those are all questions that are almost unanswerable at this
moment.
Right.
They are unanswerable.
All right. We have just a few minutes before we go to our bottom of the hour break. So I want to change the topic. Rich, I'm going to rely on you a little bit to bring us up to date on this.
Okay, because I leave in 6 minutes, right?
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't know you leave in 6 minutes.
How come?
Okay, I didn't get that memo. But that's okay. Is that a standing? Is that a standing thing? Okay.
No, then actually, he's sitting.
And in that case, I didn't know that. I did know that. I just forgot. Okay.
Right now, Sarah is saying, I knew that.
Yeah,
and
no.
And I know that Joe
and,
knew.
And yes, okay. She knows.
Well,
she knows
$1,000 an hour.
Get to it.
Yeah. At $1,000 an hour, I would get up.
GE, splitting into three.
Yeah, it was coming for a long time. It's especially, up here, we have the whole GE influence. It's one of the points that was made. It's really interesting is, GE, we think of them as, they were a consumer company. They were a big industrial company. And then really for a long time, they were a bank. And it was the bank part of it that, made them huger and is the bank part that ultimately brought them down because they became a bank at a time with people doing derivatives and, credit default swaps and things like that. And I don't think that fully understood the extent of their liability. But it's... I personally think that, after, they handed it off to a bunch of people after Jack Welch and, full disclosure, I've met him, I've worked with him.
Jack Welch.
I've had that, I'll call it the honor to do that. And I don't think anybody else after him was able to really handle the company. And I think that this is what had to happen.
So my Cliff Note version of that is it's Jeff Immelt's fault.
I so wanted to be impressed with him because he was at the time he was like this younger guy and he was taking over. But if you look at the three people, it was between him, the guy who went to 3M, McInerney, I can't remember, somebody will know, and the local guy went to Home Depot,
yeah. Right?
And the 3M guy,
Schmidt.
No.
Anyway,
so you're not going to blame that all on him, but I think went downhill after Jack Welch and
Bob Nardelli.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good job.
The weird thing is, perversely, the social media type companies, the Facebooks of the world, they're all getting bigger and more diverse and getting into things, beyond. And whereas the traditional, conglomerates are the ones that
are
breaking up.
When the Meta Bank opens up, that's when we know we have to, we're really in trouble.
I think we already are in trouble. But
yeah.
But it's, I think it's kind of sad. GE Schenectady, back in the day, there were 50,000 people working there.
Jim McNerney is the other name.
Thank you. What else? Yes, thank you.
No, you're close.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you had a Mac instead of a Mick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now I was confusing him with J. Mac, the
author.
Yeah.
Bright Lights, Big City.
Yes, yeah.
Obviously, the big question is, what does this mean for, obviously the local economy, but also it is, 1892 the company's been around to see a fall like that.
Yeah, Thomas Edison.
Is pretty amazing.
It's interesting you're considering it a fall. They're going to own 20% of each of these companies.
Oh, yeah. The value is still there. And arguably, if this works, and I think it will, those three companies 5 years from now will be worth a lot more than they are now because they'll each be doing, they'll be doing just what they do and not being slowed down or, by non-core activities. So I think it's the right move. Yeah, Jay.
Rich, is this a stock split as well, or
yeah,
represent a stock split?
I think the way they'll do it is if you had one share of say GE, now you're going to own one share of each of these companies or something like that. I, look at the journal before you read that, before you take that. That's usually how it's done.
On Tuesday, the company said it would spin off its healthcare division in early 2023, its energy businesses a year later. That would leave its aviation unit as its remaining business. So yeah. That's... Yeah.
And you have to wonder how much they license their name for other people to use. I mean, like, we have GE Monogram appliances.
Right, right.
And they didn't make them.
They haven't made them for years, right?
But yeah. they licensed their name to somebody.
Really? So who makes the coffee maker?
Somebody else.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just being funny.
Yeah, they still bring good things to life. We're trying to be. Just not them.
Right.
So you were saying about I said you only got
58 seconds left.
Yeah,
that's only $872.
Scott Davis, chief executive of Melius Research, an independent financial analysis firm, said GE got caught in the past, and now it's the end. It's over. Hmm.
Yeah, I think it's sad. It's a part of Americana. You know, you could say for good or for bad, right? Yeah. But I mean, a big part of this region's history is tied up in GE.
Right. I know people who work there for years.
Yeah. All right, Rich Honan, we are going to let you go. I know the parking meter is giving out. You've got to go to work. I thank you very much for being with us as always.
Great seeing everybody and hearing everybody.
I think we see you next week. Right? Yes. Am I right on that? So excellent. We look forward to that. In the meantime, when we come back, we'll have Alan and Libby and Dan, and we'll get to a few more topics. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to we'll go back to the
round table, Joe.
Yeah,
round
thank
table.
You very much, Dan. I appreciate it. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, Dan's there, too. Great.
I don't think she'll mind, but Sarah just sent me a note. She said, you'll notice I haven't sent a lot of letters through yet. And she said the letters are basically Trump golfed and Rich is dumb. So we're holding
Trump,
those letters.
Trump what?
Golfed.
Golf.
Yeah.
And Rich is dumb.
I'm just glad Rich is not here hawking a Chinik.
Okay, no. Very good, Dan.
Hawking a Chinik.
Very good, like hawking a Chinik. That means hitting your head with a tea kettle in Yiddish. But the thing is this, folks.
Go.
Rich isn't stupid. Rich is not dumb. Rich is very, very smart. He just doesn't agree with everything.
And I love having him on the show.
He's such
always
a great
good guy.
Panelist. Because
we all love him.
Important discussion. Remember, half of this country is with him.
Right, if not more.
All right. So let's see. We have... Sarah's right. I'm going to go to the another topic, if I may. Hey, Dan, I'll throw this one your way about the new research that is out about Latinos being the new swing voters and asking the question, what are Democrats specifically going to do about it? Latinos are not a monolithic group. They are as diverse as the country itself, and increasingly Latinos are swing voters. This is from The Hill. Both parties need to understand this or risk continuing to lose voter share from the largest and fast-growing ethnic minority in the country.
So what's to understand is the question. In other words, the Democrats have to understand it. But what is, and are we going to, and are people going to tell and hear the truth about what's going on?
So, Dan, according to an AP exit poll, Republican Glenn Youngkin in Virginia won the Latino vote 55% to 43%.
Wow.
That is a shift.
I don't
believe
it for a minute, but okay.
Okay. Now, they were saying where Latinos were just a year ago when Joe Biden beat Donald Trump, it was 61% to 36%. So what is happening, and what do you think, ultimately, the question that this article asks from The Hill, what do you do about it?
Well, I think first having a message would be good, and the right message. So, I mean, we know about Florida. We know about how the Latino vote spiked up for Donald Trump. And part of that was disinformation. Part of that was, you know, socialism and what a horrible reputation socialist countries have among the Latino community. But I would argue that the Democrats, again, missed an opportunity because, if anything, Donald Trump was like many caudillos, which is the Spanish word for Trump,
man on a white horse.
For leaders, despotic leaders, he had a lot more in common with some of these autocratic leaders in Latin America than he did with any of the socialist leaders. Or, you know, or the, he had more in common with some of these socialist autocratic leaders as well. So why is it?
So is the, so I'm sorry, Dan, is the Puerto Rican vote different from, we know, the Cuban vote, which is in Florida, which is highly conservative, don't we?
Of course, and that has to be taken into account too. But I would argue that the Democrats are ceding the moral high ground in many of these areas. And again, the Republicans have been expert at messaging and sending these messages to the Latino community through other platforms. So, for instance, in Florida, you know, I think the Democrats missed the idea that, you know, the Republicans were using WhatsApp to send these messages about how Biden represented a socialist takeover of the United States, when in fact, the opposite is true, that Trump had much more in common with somebody like Daniel Ortega, who stifles, you know, dissent and leans more towards autocracy than anything. So where was the message on the other side? And I also think that the Hispanic community is much more attuned to an aspirational message than to a negative message. So if you want to reach the Hispanic community writ large, it's more about, hey, we are the party of aspiration. We're the party of the American dream. The other guys are the party of no. They're the party of zero sum. And if you begin to look at the Hispanic community in terms of there being much more amenable to a positive message than to a negative, I think that goes a long way.
So my question,
and I think
my question to you is, and you know, it's bound to lead to a lot of trouble, but is the is the Hispanic community does it harbor certain racial and other prejudices of its own as a group?
It's no different than any other group in that way.
I would agree.
And I think that what we have to understand about the Hispanic community is that it is obviously what everybody says. It's not a monolith, and you do have to target the message. You can't say the same thing to a Cuban American that you would say to somebody in El Paso, Texas, who is Latino. And so you have to be cognizant of those different types of messages that you have to promote. But to a larger extent, I think we have to realize that the Republicans have been very good about painting themselves as the party of patriotism. And I think this is a much larger question under which you can also place the Latino vote. And that is, Democrats, if they want to be successful, have to take back the flag symbolically. They cannot allow Republicans, if they are to be successful in some of these minority communities, to say they are the party of America, of the American dream, of the American aspiration. And I think it behooves the Democrats, if they want to get back to the place that they had captured at one point, they have to begin to take back the moniker of the Patriotic Party. And I think that you can make that argument when you talk about how, you know, the Republican Party tends to lean towards corporations, the wealthy, and not the people who need a chance, right, to need an opportunity, and all they're asking for is a chance to become fulsome, you know, members of the American community. And I think that the Democrats make a huge mistake when they allow Republicans to seize the moniker of patriot versus what they have been doing for the Hispanic community for a long time.
Which is why I was surprised. I'm sorry. I shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
We have to be out in 12 seconds. Dan, I'll give you the last word. Thank you very much. Alan, thank you very much.
You'll remember
tomorrow. We'll talk about tomorrow.
Yes, of course. I'll remember it 5 minutes from now.
Libby, thank you very much. We'll be right back.